Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks so much for your support. Next week, I hope to share some stats about our program with you. I did this kind of at the beginning of the podcast several years ago, and we've grown quite a bit since then. So we'll talk a little bit about the who's and how many's of who's listening. I won't overwhelm anybody. I'll keep it kind of short, maybe space it out over a few days. But the show's definitely grown quite a bit, and I appreciate everybody who's been part of that. All right, well, now it's time for today's episode of the Carter Brown Mysteries. Today's episode is Call for a Columnist, Part 3. And coming up later in the program, we will wrap up the Alvin Summers matter. Here now is Carter Brown.
Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
People have often told me how much they envied me.
Well, I can't blame them. Who wouldn't envy a guy who writes a column like Dynamite with Johnny Lane, which has a 4 million readership? But right now, even I wouldn't envy me. By the time Senator Rowland's ex-girlfriend Thelma and her two hoodlums had finished with me, I was really in trouble. I knew what was going to happen when the two editions of my column that Thelma had forced me to write hit the streets. When Senator Rowland, in the full pride of his position at the head of the Vice Probe Committee, read those allegations against him and Chief of Police O'Byrne, I could guess who was going to be on the burning end. Me. And to add injury to libel, Tony Spencer, my bodyguard, the girl with the captivating curves and the concrete constitution, had first rescued me and then slugged me over the skull.
Johnny, you're awake.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Oh, fine, just fine. How long did I sleep? Hey, you hit me.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Honest, I am. But it was the only way to get you here.
Where? Where am I?
This is the hideout that Mr. Arts picked out for you. You're safe here.
Safe? Nothing. I got no time to be safe. I remember now. I got to get to the paper. I got to stop and printing those columns.
I'm afraid it's too late for that, Johnny.
What do you mean? The paper won't go to bed for a couple of hours
yet. It's already been to bed, Johnny. And so have you. For 3 days.
3 days?
Well, don't scream like that, Johnny. You'll burst the eardrum.
I'll just burst. I can't have been out for 3 days just from a tap on the head.
Of course not. I dosed you with a sleeping draft every time you woke up.
And those columns, they've been published?
Yes, Johnny. And I don't know what you're so worried about. I think you're wonderful to have the courage to say what you did about the senator and the chief of police. They gave it a special treatment both days. Ran it right on the front page with a heavy black border around it.
For my obituary notice. Hey, but that only covers 2 days. How about today's issue? What did they run today?
A statement saying you hadn't had time to write your usual column, but that they confidently awaited the proof you're sure to bring in. Oh, they were awfully nice, Johnny. They said that in spite of intimidation, writs, and threats, they stood solidly behind you.
Intimidation, writs, and threats? Holy cow, I'm a dead duck. Look, I've got to get back to town before they serve me up to the cops with cranberry sauce.
Well, there's no reason why you can't go now. Mr. Arts and I were only concerned with laying you low for a couple of days.
You did that all right. No guy could have been laid lower.
I've got the car. I'll drive you back.
No, thanks. I'll drive myself back. As of now, your services are no longer required.
But, Johnny, you'll need a bodyguard more than ever now.
The kind of bodyguard that knocks me out cold for 3 days I can get out of a bottle. And it won't cost me $35 a day in expenses. Goodbye, Miss Spencer.
Monsieur Lane, I'm so happy to see you. We have missed you.
You're going to miss me a lot more in the future, Jules. For a number of years, I should imagine.
You are going away, Mr. Lane?
Sing Sing, Alcatraz. State hasn't made up its mind yet. But it will, Jules. It will.
You would like a bottle of your usual?
Two.
With pleasure. I will fetch it myself.
Johnny! Oh, it's good to see you, Johnny.
Oh, it's great to see you, Simone. A little luscious feminine company is just what I need right now.
I was so worried about you, Johnny. Those terrible men. Did they hurt you?
They killed me.
Killed you? You are joking, no?
Your drink, Miss Simone. You know, when you did not come for 4 nights, I was worried. I wondered perhaps if I had inadvertently insulted you.
Jules, as long as you supply drinks like this, you can't insult me.
Oh, I am proud to serve you, Monsieur Lane. The man who has the courage to print what you have printed is a man to be admired.
Oh, don't drag that up. There's a $2 million damage suit against me and the paper, and my editor's going quietly crazy.
What is the latest development? Perhaps you would give us the inside story, Monsieur. Tell us how your fight against vice is progressing.
Vice has won a technical knockout. It's only a matter of the referee counting me out. He must be somewhere around 8 already.
Truly, Johnny, it is as bad as that.
Worse. Much worse.
Jules, would you mind leaving us alone for a little while?
No, of course not. I just remembered. Someone ordered a duck and I have to go out and shoot one.
Poor Johnny. You are in low spirits, eh?
I expect to be in very high spirits by the time I finish this bottle.
Johnny, if you feel low, why not go to my place? You can tell me all about it, and it might help you, eh?
Yeah, I guess it might.
Johnny, here comes trouble, I think. When you're through, come to my apartment. I'll be waiting.
I looked up to see what Simone meant by trouble, and I realized she was right. Descending on me was Captain Stanger, Chief of Police O'Byrne's right-hand man.
Well, if it isn't my favorite columnist.
Sit down, Captain. Kill yourself drinking.
Hey, when did you get back into circulation?
Tonight. I was kidnapped.
Oh, no. And I suppose you were forced to write those columns. You better think up something better than that, Johnny boy. O'Byrne's madder than a hornet. He's issuing a call for you as a material witness. And by the time the boys are through with you, you'll be happy to admit it was you who assassinated Lincoln.
Okay, so you come to take me in. Do I get the handcuffs on me now?
Oh, you got me wrong, Johnny. I'm not taking you anyplace. Officially, I'm off duty. And officially, I don't even know that you're wanted. I just dropped in for a friendly chat.
I don't get it. Why should you bother to tip me off?
I'll tell you, Johnny. I think you're in a spot.
Give me an original thought.
That somebody must have tipped you off to print that stuff. Somebody who knew what they were talking about. After all, they were right about Albert Ferraro's killing, weren't they?
You mean they could be right about Senator Rowland and Police Chief O'Byrne?
Oh, did I say that? I just figured that if I were you, Johnny, I'd find out and find out fast before you even got a chance of finding out. Before you got bruises where your body used to be. I think it over, Johnny. And you don't have much time. Yeah, be seeing you, Scribbler.
I watched him go, wondering whether he was crazy or me. Then I pulled myself together and left the club. Destination, Simone's apartment. When her door opened, I thought, she'd changed suddenly. She was wearing a suit and had developed a blue shadow on her chin. Then I realized it was her Adagio partner, Simon.
I've come in, Mr. Lane. I've been expecting you. Simone was caught up with some business, so I have taken her place.
You won't mind if I say that it's not quite the same?
But still, perhaps I can persuade you to put up with it. You know, I envy you, Mr. Lane. A columnist of your renown must have it. fascinating life.
Yeah, it's all right when you can keep on living. It's the dying that's the tough part.
I do not understand.
I died tonight, professionally.
Oh. You know, surprisingly enough, Mr. Lane, I think I can help you with your problem.
You?
I have some knowledge which should interest you.
Okay, I'm listening.
You know, yours is a wonderful country, Mr. Lane. Everything here is organized on the grand scale. Even crime. The rackets. And there's a new type of racketeer today. The racketeer with education, good social background, good standing in the community. Perhaps a company director or even a politician. Is that not so?
Yeah, it's so.
Let us take a hypothetical case. Say, a politician who is also a racketeer. Let us imagine him controlling the vice and the profits of vice in the city. For a time, all goes well. But sooner or later, what you call the heat is on. People get tired of the rackets flourishing under their noses and the noses of the police. They protest. The newspapers take up the protest. Obviously, something must be done.
What?
What would you do in a like situation?
Listen, I may have been taken for a ride the last few days, but I'm not that dumb. I thought of that one. You have yourself elected head of an investigating committee inquiring into vice in the city so that you can cover yourself. And at the same time, crush any opposition that might need crushing.
Exactly so. I congratulate you, Mr. Lane. But this opposition you speak of is, of course, part of the politician's own crime organization.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Why should you? It is that part of the organization that is being squeezed too much, bled just a little too much by the politician. They are not organized, and they are alarmed by the politician's coming activities with the investigation committee. But they lack the means to positive action. And then the politician does something very stupid.
He throws over his girlfriend, Thelma, whom he had confided in too long and too much.
Precisely. And Thelma has some knowledge of events to happen. In particular, she knows that one member of the opposition is still working for our politician.
Let's just call him Roland, huh? I'm getting tired of this hypothetical case.
Very well. So, Thelma knows that Ferraro, who is supposedly one of the opposition, is still working for the senator. He is to give evidence at the first hearing of the investigation committee. He will reveal the activities of all the people in the senator's organization whom the senator wishes to get rid of.
So Roland didn't have Ferraro killed.
On the contrary, the opposition had him killed.
Ah. Just where do you fit into the picture, Simon?
I am a member of the opposition. It was handled cleverly, I think. Ferraro's death served a double purpose. It prevented him giving information, and it served as a warning to the senator.
And then what?
And then we used our masterstroke. We needed widespread publicity for our scheme to work. And what could be better than a columnist with a readership of 4 million? You, Mr. Lane, don't you feel flattered?
I feel slightly sick, though I was taken for a ride.
All the way. First, you were given several items to publish. Then all that was needed was to move you out of the way, persuade you to write what we wanted you to write, and make sure it was published. At first, it seemed as though our plans came unstuck when your friends rescued you. But fortunately, they hid you away as well as we could have done ourselves.
What happens now?
Now? It is a sad thing, Mr. Lane. But you will appreciate that the situation cannot remain static. At the moment, the police and Senator Roland are allied against you. Your own newspaper will discredit you. So the public will begin to doubt your allegations. But one thing would convince them that you were telling the truth.
What's that?
If you were to be murdered. What? Then people would be convinced that you had been right, and that you had been murdered to prevent your presenting the proof of your allegations. It is not a bad prospect, is it, Mr. Lane? Once you are dead, you will be a national hero, a martyr. Think of the honor and glory.
I'm thinking of what comes before that.
Oh, don't let it worry you. It will be a quick end. Don't struggle, Mr. Lane. Accept the inevitable. We experience the greatest adventure that life can offer. Death. I as the giver, and you as the receiver.
Thank you. Welcome back. Well, the Australians in the 1950s could be more cynical about our government than we were, and urban governments in general. I will say that that guy does make, from an egotistical perspective, the killing of Johnny Lane seem almost appealing to him, but he's kind of hooked on that whole idea of living. And the question is, will he be allowed to? You'll have to join us next week where we'll wrap out Call for a Columnist. Now it's time for today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This one is the Alvin Summers Matter, Part 5, which was set up with a fabulous cliffhanger. Let's see how it all turns out.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar. I told you, that's my name. What do you want, an affidavit?
I've got to be sure.
Look, you've got me out here in the middle of the jungle with a gun in my back.
Don't turn around.
And I can't even see you. You think I'd be kidding you at a time like this?
Any move at all, and it'll be your last.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement of $75,000. Item 12, 2 cents. Just what I figured my life was worth at the moment. Gloria Harris had taken me down the beach and into the jungle to show me the hut where Alvin Summers had been hiding out. There was no sign of him. But I heard a noise outside in the underbrush and went out to investigate. I didn't see a thing, but I felt something. A gun barrel pressing against the back of my neck.
I want to talk to you, Dollar.
You've got a quaint way of arranging a conversation, believe me. I could do better if you'd take away that gun.
Johnny!
Don't answer.
Who's answering?
Johnny!
Wait.
Well?
Be in your hotel room in exactly 1 hour.
Look, what's this all about?
You're looking for Alvin Summers, aren't you?
Oh, am I?
Johnny, where are you?
I've got some information about him for you.
Let's have it now.
Not now. I've got to talk to you alone. Be in your hotel room in town in 1 hour, understand?
Look.
Do as I say, and be sure you're alone. Alone.
Okay.
Now, just keep looking straight ahead. Don't turn around, and don't tell anyone about this. Anyone. Understand?
You make it pretty clear.
I'll be watching you, Dollar. You won't see me, but I'll see you.
I can believe it, mister.
Johnny, please. Johnny, where... Oh, here you are.
Yeah, here I am.
Why didn't you answer me?
I came out here looking for a guy, remember? How am I going to find him if I start shouting at you?
But I got worried when you didn't come back to the hut.
Yeah.
That noise you heard outside, did you see anything?
No, I didn't see a thing.
Johnny, didn't you find anything to give you a lead on where Summers might be?
I don't know.
But you said if I helped you find him, you'd see what you could do about getting me a passport back to the States.
Yeah, sure. Come on, let's get out of here.
It suits me fine. This place gives me the creeps, all these trees and vines. Broad daylight, but you can't see a thing.
I know.
My imagination's still working overtime. I've got that feeling we're being watched again. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, real funny. We kept on toward the beach. Gloria was fidgeting because she thought somebody was watching us. I was fidgeting because I knew somebody was. And I had a strong hunch he was the man whose long-distance phone call to the States brought me down to Mexico in the first place. We got back to the beach. I took Gloria up to her hotel and went down to mine in town. As I crossed the lobby toward the stairway to the second floor, out popped a familiar face.
Hello, friend.
Oh, Carson. Lieutenant Gomez let you out of jail, huh?
Oh, now let's get one thing straight, friend. I never was actually in jail.
Well, you're lucky. I've seen the jail.
Huh? Oh, well, I just had to pay a fine, and that judge they got in this burg read me the riot act, but then they let me go.
Well, good. So now it's back to selling zippers, huh?
Sure is, and I'm behind schedule, too. Checking out right now, as a matter of fact. A lot of territory to cover. Like I always say, half the world's
waiting to get zipped up. Yeah, you told me.
I did? Say, Dollar, I'd like you to do me a favor.
Oh?
that little trouble I got into last night up at the Playa del Mar Hotel, I'd sure appreciate it if you'd keep quiet about it when you get back to the States.
You mean you don't want anybody to know you got plastered, grabbed a serape, and did the fandango?
Now, Dollar!
Broke a guitar over the musician's head?
Now, can't we just forget about
that? Believe me,
that?
I had until you reminded me. Now, Carson, I'm reasonably sure we don't know the same people and won't be seeing each other again. I'd say the secret of your lurid past was pretty safe.
Well, I sure hope so, friend. But about not seeing each other in the States, I was planning on looking you up.
Goody.
Yes, sir, I got a deal for you.
Sorry, but I have all the zippers I can use at the moment.
No, that's not what I mean, friend. I've been trying to get you into a cribbage game, remember?
How can I forget?
Well, instead, I'm going to look you up in the States and let you teach me to play gin rummy.
How could I be so lucky? Oh, sorry, I think that's my phone. So long, Carson.
I'll sure look you up back in the good old USA, friend.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Keep your hands on the table.
What? Oh, my shadow again.
Anybody follow you?
Not that I know of. You're early.
I know. And I searched your room.
That's become an old Santo Tomas custom.
To make sure you really were Johnny Dollar.
So now you know. What about it?
You can turn around.
I don't know. Maybe you'll tell me what... Wait a minute. A decent shave and you'd match that photo I have in my suitcase. Alvin Summers.
Yeah. I'm Alvin Summers.
I don't get it. I had you figured for the man who made that long-distance call to the States that tipped me off to come down here.
You're right about that, too.
You put the finger on yourself?
If you want to call it that.
Well, what happened? Your deal go sour on you, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sit down. Take it easy. Tell me about it. I'll turn on the overhead fan. Pretty stuffy in here.
Dollar, that phone call you got just now...
Hung up. Clerk downstairs must have rung the wrong room.
Or somebody was checking to see if you were here.
Could be. Okay, suppose you start from the top.
What was that?
Relax.
What are you...
Just one of the charming features of this room.
Why?
You turn on that big overhead fan, it slams the balcony door.
Oh, well, turn it off, will you? I'm kind of edgy.
Yeah, sure.
You asked me if my deal had gone sour. It went very sour. Oh, I had it all figured out. I was planning it for a year. I was going to embezzle the $75,000 and really live big.
Yeah.
Instead of that, I spent all my time hiding. Mexico City, Cuernavaca, Tampico, you name it, I was there. Always undercover, always hiding. Did you ever spend much time hiding, Dollar?
No, not much.
Oh, it's a great life, great. Every time somebody looks at you on the street, you're sure he's after you, tailing you. You wake up in the middle of the night, you see a shadow outside. It turns out to be just a bush, but you spend the rest of the night sweating. Finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. The rest of my life that way.
You know, Summers, a lot of guys figure that out before it's too late. Too bad you didn't.
Yeah. So, finally, I phoned the bonding company long distance. I knew they'd send an investigator. They sent you. I thought if I could talk to someone like you, see what could be done.
There's only one thing can be done at this point, Summers. Come back with me to the States. Bring back what's left of the money.
$60,000.
That'll help. But you know there can't be any deal.
Yeah, I guess I always knew that. Here, take the gun.
Thanks. Now, what about the money?
It's in a safe deposit box in Mexico City. Here. Here's the key.
One thing I don't get, though, Summers.
Yeah?
You wanted me to contact, but you were sure playing hard to find.
Well, I had to be careful. I got a look at you the first day you arrived. I wasn't sure you were the one, so I decided to come to your room that night, but then I saw somebody else coming here, so I gave up.
Who was it?
The bellboy.
Benito? Hey... That'll be just before he got knifed.
Oh, no. I wasn't the one who killed him, Dollar. I'm no killer. Just the fool who runs away with somebody else's money, remember? Anyway, I didn't have another chance to get to you till today. I had to keep undercover so they wouldn't find me.
Wait a minute. Who's they?
The man who arranged for me to come down here and the girl who was going to make it all worthwhile.
The girl? Summers,
Leave
don't...
Leave me, Johnny.
Gloria.
Hello, baby. Here, let me...
Leave the gun right where it is, Johnny. Put that safe deposit key on the table.
I guess you're calling them.
Thanks.
And it all adds up. You found out Summers here was planning to turn himself in. You didn't want that money to slip through your fingers. But Summers disappeared from his hideout. You couldn't find him, so you figured you'd let me find him for you.
That's right. And it worked. And you're so right about that money. You think I'd give it up now?
Gloria.
Keep out of it, Alvin. If you want to go back and be a Boy Scout, that's your business. The money stays with me. Johnny.
Yeah?
This doesn't have to be the end of it for us.
Oh. So now we get the pitch about making beautiful music, huh?
I'm not kidding, Johnny. $60,000's a lot of money.
You know, you put on quite an act. Maybe I believed a little bit of it. But if I did, I quit the moment you walked through that door just now.
Okay, Johnny, that's enough. I thought maybe you'd be smart, but if you won't, you leave me no choice.
No, Gloria, don't. Gloria! The balcony. Out on the balcony.
Hold it!
Carson.
Stay right where you are, friend.
Oh, shut up. She's dead.
She crossed me.
You and she were working against each other. She wanted me to lead her to Summers. You wanted to find him yourself.
That's right. And Summers, you took a lot of finding.
That's why you killed Benito the bellboy to shut his mouth. Then you went up to the big hotel and clowned around so you'd get arrested and that way set up an alibi for the evening.
I was pretty proud of that little idea, Dollar. And it's all worked out just the way I wanted it. You see, right from the start, I...
Carson was holding all the trumps. They were made out of lead, and I knew he was going to start dealing them any second. Then I remembered the overhead fan. The switch was right next to my elbow. The balcony door was open, and Carson had his back to it.
What are you doing?
Just turning on the fan. I need some air. Can you blame me?
Yeah. You're sweating, aren't you, Dollar? What's the matter? You losing your nerve? Well, it really doesn't matter. What
the... The door slammed. Carson whirled. And I knocked the lamp off the table. By the time I hit the floor, my gun was out. I picked up the lamp and lit it again. Summers was crouched in a corner. Across the room, sitting on the floor, was Carson staring stupidly down at the red bullet hole in his side. I picked his gun up off the floor.
Dollar!
Summers, call the police station, Lieutenant Gomez.
Yeah, all right.
Help me, Dollar. It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. But not as much as it hurt Benito and Gloria.
I...
You finally got me into a game, didn't you, friend? And you lost. Expense account item 13. Double the amount of item 1. $440. Transportation back to the States for Alvin Summers and me. And you know, I turned him over to the authorities as soon as we got back. That's the way he wanted it. Gloria? Well... Once in a while, I get to wondering if she really meant some of the things she told me. Not that it matters. Conclusion of report. Expense account total $923. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, the Valentine matter. And believe me, it's not the kind of Valentine you'd wish on even your worst enemy. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood, written by Robert Reif. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Marvin Miller, Don Diamond, Tony Barrett, and Parley Bear. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, that Carson guy just gives cribbage players a bad name. Now, I wonder if he actually was capable of playing cribbage. If Johnny had known, he might have been able to call him on the bluff. But overall, a very nicely done episode. And one of those I cannot find any other script it was based on. Of course, when I first heard the title of The Valentine Matter, I was immediately reminded of George Valentine. I've listened to that serial. There's no connection, but it's nonetheless a good program. And by the way, if anybody is aware of another radio program that this was adapted from that I'm somehow missing, let me know. All right, well, listener comments and feedback now. And I have a message from Joel who emails in. I was interested to research Virginia Gregg and Jaime Del Valle, the producer and transcriber of early episodes of Johnny Dollar, The Lineup, and many other programs. I was interested to learn that he was married to Virginia Gregg, who played so many key roles, Brooksy among others, and was very active in television and film. She had a prolific career. Del Valle was a descendant of the Carrillo family, who was among the founders of Los Angeles. It's interesting. I had never known that those two were married. Of course, Virginia Gregg, I've been completing my countdown of radio's most essential people, and she finished number 5, highest for any character performer. And she really had a great poise. One story I read about her on the Digital Deli, FTP.com, was that when she was playing on the radio, she'd often do different parts. She knew her parts so well, she would actually sit and knit while she waited for it to be her turn to come on again. She was that professional, that good behind the microphone. And he goes on to write, "Your podcast has become a regular part of my nighttime ritual. I prefer these programs to television and appreciate your hard work and diligence as well as your commentaries in your distinctive accent. Is it native to Boise or from somewhere else?" You know, this is a great question. And I wish I could give you a really good answer. Truth is, I don't know. Both my parents were from the Northwest. However, my father served in the Army, traveled around, spent several years down south around North Carolina way. And then growing up, I spent several years up in Northwest Montana, a place called the Yak. And then we traveled to and fro up and down the Northwest with my dad as sort of a itinerant preacher. Then headed down to the South for a summer. Yeah, a summer. I think I would have preferred spring, but, and then up to Montana, a couple of smaller towns, Eureka, and then Kalispell, and then moved out to Boise. So somewhere around there, in that time, I apparently picked up this accent, and honestly, I don't know what it is. I guess I'm going on the assumption for now that it's an Adam Graham accent. And if anyone out there knows the source specifically, let me know. So it's a Grahamian accent. That's what we're calling it for now. All right, well, we will see you tomorrow for the lineup. Join us back here on Monday for another episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And on Friday, next Friday, we wrap up Call for a Columnist. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box13 at GreatDetectives.net, follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.